Like Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Gordy Hab, and it's just, oh, it's great to have a chance to catch up with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
I'm really looking forward to diving into your new soundtrack for Star Wars Squadrons. And what is so cool is this is the, as far as I know, this is the first time that a full soundtrack has been released with the game. So we've got a lot to talk about.
Yeah, it's very exciting. This is the first time, I believe, in at least in EA's history of releasing a Star Wars game along with a soundtrack album. So yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's very cool.
I can imagine, and we can talk, you know, in a little bit about how you put the soundtrack together, because I'm sure that was its own challenge. But it'd be fun to, you know, just talk about what you thought about with writing the music for this game, because it's set after the Battle of Endor, and it's not like the other games. There's a multiplayer component where you can fly either as a New Republic pilot or an Imperial pilot, and the games, it can go either way. The skirmishes can go either way. And so when you were approached to write the music for this, what were those early discussions like?
Yeah, you know, the bulk of the game, I mean, the takeaway of the game is this multiplayer mode that you're speaking about, the sort of flying in a TIE fighter or X-Wing and, you know, taking to space and, you know, engaging in these space battles and dogfights. That's the, you know, the meat of the game. And so from the very beginning, the discussions were really about how to make that feel exciting and fun and, you know, a bit nostalgic. So, you know, and of course the era that the game exists in was an important factor as well. And, you know, a lot of the musical decisions. But, you know, the general idea was that to write a score that would, you know, sort of evoke these nostalgic feelings of, like, you know, similar to what I had when I was a kid playing with the, you know, the Star Wars toys and, you know, chasing, you know, my sister around the house with my X-Wing, and she's, you know, running around with a TIE fighter or whatever. And so it was sort of like a way of, you know, how do I bring that excitement into music and, you know, bring that excitement to the player? That was the goal. And, you know, of course, like you mentioned as well, that, you know, you could play as one of two factions. And so we wanted to theme those factions as well. So there's a rebel theme and an imperial theme. And, you know, they interweave with each other quite constantly throughout the game. So that was sort of the concept behind the score. And yeah, I mean, so it was really a ton of fun to write this score, because it's quite a bit of high impact, you know, action, adventure, chase music. It's pretty fun.
Oh yeah, and I have to say, I mean, it's great in the game, but it's also fun listening in my car on the expressway.
That's great. Yeah,
it's really, yeah, really easy to imagine that I'm in an X-wing and
yeah,
those
just
other guys.
Watch your speed.
Well, sure. Yeah, definitely. But yeah, I'd love to talk with you about themes, because the main theme, at least the one that's included on the soundtrack, mm-hmm. is just so thrilling and exciting. And so in your mind, like, what makes a great theme?
You know, I think it's a couple things. I think it's, you have to have something that the audience can latch onto. Now, whether that's a sound or, you know, something sonic or an actual melody. But in this case, I think we opted for trying to come up with a theme that was very memorable, something that, you know, if I was able to weave it in throughout the rest of the score, would become sort of an earworm for the end user, the game player, and be something that they could walk away from remembering. And, you know, you hear that theme and you instantly remember, you know, where you were on the battlefield. You know, that's kind of the concept of it, is sort of this anchor point. So, you know, I decided to write a theme that I focus primarily on, you know, coming up with a melody that I felt was easy to remember, easy to sing, this type of thing. But then the second component of a good theme, in my opinion, is even if you have a great melody, sometimes it doesn't always work in all situations, all scenarios. So a great theme, however, in my opinion, is something that can be played multiple ways. You know, it could be, you could do a sad version of that theme. You can do a dark version of that theme. You can do an exciting, over-the-top adventure version of the theme. So I wanted to come up with something that was easily transferable to multiple moods, emotions, scenarios, and I think I got it with this theme. In fact, there's really, if you boil it down, there's actually just one theme in the game, but out of that main theme was born the rebel theme and the imperial theme, and they're all related to that main theme. So you'll hear all three of those things sort of weave in and out throughout the score, and hopefully the takeaway is something that's very memorable.
Oh yeah, it is. I mean, I'm hearing it in my head right now.
Well, that's great. That was the goal.
Well, and what's so cool about this theme too is the subtle way that you used it in a lot of the different cues. And I'm just curious about, you know, what makes a great Star Wars theme specifically, do you think?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. And the ingredients of this, it's still one of those things that I'm sort of trying to study and figure out, because you just know it when you hear it. What the recipe for that is still kind of a mystery. But anytime you hear a theme, the theme that you hear in this game, for example, the main theme for Squadrons, is, you know, for me, it was probably version 20 of the themes that I wrote before I even sent it into to Motive or EA to listen to, because I myself was judging myself on that same criteria. It's like, is this a memorable theme? You know, if I work on it for, you know, a couple hours and then I walk away and come back to it a day later, do I still remember it in my head? And if I don't, then that's sort of my litmus test for whether or not it's really an earworm and a hook. So, you know, taking little breaks from it, coming back to it, if it's memorable to me or not, you know, that's sort of my criteria for, you know, making its way to the finish line. And this theme in particular, just, it stuck with me. You know, I would find that I'd write for an hour working on it, and then, you know, for the rest of the day, it was stuck in my head, or, you know, I'm driving the car and it pops back in my head, or this kind of thing. And this is sort of the... I think that's the real determining factor on whether or not the theme is you know, a solid hook, something that you remember, is whether or not it sticks with you, you know, even after you've kind of moved away from it. And this one did for me, so we rolled with this one.
It's a great theme, and I really love how you mentioned that one of the hallmarks of a great theme is one that can change its musical personality depending on the situation that you're writing for. And one of the tracks in the soundtrack that really, I think, shows that off fantastically is Fallen Comrades, because, you know, the theme itself, the first time you hear it, it's very triumphant and exciting, and, you know, we're going to go off and, you know, fight the evil empire or whatever. And but Fallen Comrades is such a wonderful, really thoughtful and beautiful version of the theme.
That's very cool. Yeah, I appreciate that. And you know, that, like I said, I mean, I think that really does help. You know, when you have a theme that's easily, you know, manipulated into various styles or moods or emotions and this kind of thing, I think that's really, you know, the perfect recipe for a memorable theme, because if you hear it in multiple ways, then it sticks even more. So, and I think in this case that this theme did translate well to multiple moods and emotions. So, that's great to hear that that's working.
Oh yeah, it's beautiful and it's emotional, and again, it you can tell it's the same theme, but it has a completely different character. And what I'm curious about is how you adapted it for the Imperial parts of the soundtrack, because that has a really distinctive, iconic sound of its own. So what was involved with kind of, you know, adapting it for that?
Yeah, so, you know, with typically in the Star Wars, you know, game universe, the Imperial themes, the Imperial music has, you know, a couple characteristics about it that are, you know, pretty common. You know, this sort of minor key, you know, darker keys, and this element of a march, you know, so like a backbeat in the percussion section that makes it feel like a heavy, you know, walking pace march. And so I opted to use that as sort of the, you know, the foundation of it, but then take the main theme from the game and sort of adapt it and fit it tonally into a more minor, you know, darker key, this kind of thing. So that was sort of the approach, is like, how can I take this melody at face value and, you know, change the accompaniment, change the harmonization of it to make it feel darker and more Imperial. And then once I got there, then I realized, you know, that a couple notes in the melody need to change as well. And maybe I add a little B section that's a little more Imperial. And that was sort of that was my approach. It's like, let's start with this, the foundation of this main theme, and see how I can darken it up. And that was the goal. And I think it works pretty well. So, and what's cool about it is that it also relates back to the main theme, just like the Rebel theme relates back to the main theme. So I feel like no matter what faction you're playing with, you're still hearing this earworm that's sticking with you, even if it's a variation of the main theme.
Yeah. And that's such a good quality to have. And it, you know, it kind of is the glue that holds the sound together. And so, yeah, so building on that, what were some of the things you did to the theme so that it would sound like a Rebel theme?
Yeah, so for that, I mean, similar approach, actually. So on its own, the main theme for the game is a bit more triumphant and, you know, brighter in color. So it was already close to being, you know, rebellious, if you will. So I didn't have to do too much to adapt it to be, you know, the Rebel version of the theme. It really was more from an orchestration standpoint, you know, choosing the right instruments, choosing, you know, having it, the melody played in trumpets, harmonized in a way that makes it feel bright and sort of triumphant and majestic. That was sort of, you know, my approach to make it more of a Rebel theme. But that was a much shorter leap from the main theme to the Rebel theme than to the Imperial, for example.
Yeah, well, it must have been a fun challenge to sort of play around with it until you got the right sound.
It really was. And, you know, to be honest with you, it was one of those things where in the beginning of the writing process, I was very nervous and somewhat anxious about, you know, sticking with this main theme, because I realized there's a lot of music in this game and the goal would be to have that theme woven in throughout the entire thing. So once we settle on that main theme, I'm sort of stuck with it for a very long time and have to generate a lot of music that's based on it. So I needed to first and foremost like it myself, so that I would feel, you know, excited about, you know, using it throughout the rest of the score. And I did, you know, I settled on it first before sending it to Motif and EA, and, you know, they agreed. So it was actually kind of great to get to work with something that we all agreed, you know, was a solid, you know, theme that we could manipulate in multiple ways, different emotions, etc.
Oh, sure. And I bet that kind of streamlined everything after that too, because if everybody's in agreement that this is the theme that you could use going forward, then it makes things a little bit easier, and there's not quite as much, you know, second guessing and that kind of thing.
Exactly right. And and even more to that note, it for me, having material to start from on any given day of the writing process is vital for being able to be efficient with the writing process. So, you know, once we settled on that theme, you know, I still have 8 months of composing to do. So every morning I walk in my studio and sit down. If I'm looking at a blank page of paper, that's extremely intimidating and it takes a long time to get ideas rolling. But if I walk into the studio and it's like, I know I'm starting with this theme or this little fragment of this theme, it's like I have a launching point to start my day with. And so having a solid theme like that really does help kind of, you know, the composing process be really efficient.
Yeah, I'll bet. I remember the first time we talked, and I was just really intrigued to learn that you really start your composing process in the old school way by sitting at the piano and writing yeah. stuff down. Are you still working like that?
I am indeed, yes. So I still write everything by hand, but I don't claim it to be some, you know, superior way of working or anything along those lines. In fact, in some ways, it probably slows me down because it's a slower process. And then I still have to take it into the computer and do mock-ups and eventually orchestrate it and notation software and this kind of thing. So it's an added step. But for me to compose the most natural thing that I'm hearing in my head, I have to eliminate as many obstacles from my brain to the audience. And so the second you put computers in between my brain and the audience, then that's just one more thing sort of slowing down the chain of creativity. And so for me, the simplest, the shortest path from my mind's ear is just through my pencil. So it's much easier that way. I can write in the middle of the night, and not make any noise. It's actually kind of it's pretty great in that way. But it also just, I've become so comfortable with that process that, you know, oftentimes I'm not even using a piano. I'm just with a pencil and a piece of paper, and I just write what I hear in my head, you know. And then I go, of course, and I orchestrate it, and I put it in the computer, and we do mock-ups and, you know, manipulate the mock-ups later to make it sound a little better, these kinds of things. So it's the starting process. I mean, if anyone was to actually look at my physical manuscript sketches, it's just chicken scratch that only makes sense to me, but it makes sense to me, which is all that really matters, because you know the end goal is to take that, you know, that sketch, that manuscript sketch, and orchestrate it and realize it with a real orchestra.
Yeah, and as long as you know what you meant.
Exactly right. Yeah.
I've looked at some of Beethoven's manuscripts, and I pity his publisher because
yeah, they're a mess. I think I might be slightly better than that, but not too far off. Yeah.
Well, you've been working on Star Wars games now for such a long span of time, and I'm just wondering how your musical style has evolved as the games come along.
Yeah, that's a great question, because you know, each project has had sort of its own sort of, you know, musical needs, and based on the time period the game is set in, you know, these kinds of factors really play into the style of music that I'm writing, even the style of orchestration that I'm using for the music. So for me, like, one of the trickiest things is I need to keep it fresh and interesting. I don't want to just keep repeating myself, but it helps that these projects each have their own era that they exist in, their own musical aesthetic that they're after. Something like Jedi Fallen Order, for example, which, you know, came out last year, and the soundtrack actually just came out as well in August. This score was much darker and more serious in tone, and you know, and we've really sort of tried to take it new places and you know, sort of do the Star Wars 2.0, if you will, sort of modernizing the sound a bit and trying new things and being experimental, where a score like Squadrons, for example, needed to be much more rooted in the nostalgia that the films had sort of set up for us. So, you know, having that variety has helped it stay interesting for me as a composer. You know, another thing that I've noticed that, you know, in the beginning of my, you know, sort of tenure writing in the Star Wars game universe, I would lean heavily on listening to examples, listening to source material and that kind of thing, and you know, trying to internalize that. At a certain point, it became so comfortable to me to write in this particular style that I no longer really needed reference points. I would just do what came most natural to me, and that tended to be something that would work well in the Star Wars game universe. So now when I work on other projects or other films, I'm usually having to sort of rein in that aesthetic a bit. But in the Star Wars games, I'm able just to kind of let go and do whatever comes to mind, and usually it fits in that world pretty well.
Wow, it must be like finally, you know, learning a language, and when you get to the country that the language is from, you can really just adapt and assimilate and
exactly.
Feel like a native, right? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. It's, you know, like where maybe in the beginning of my time working on this type of project, you know, I was using the same metaphor. It's like I was able to read the language but not really speak it, you know. And now I'm fluent. You know, I think after I think it's been about a decade, even a little more, that have been working on this type of music. So at this point now, it's very second nature to me.
Yeah, and I can hear, you know, echoes, especially with this one, because of the kind of retro feel to it. And yet, you know, it's so identifiable as music for the Star Wars and the Star Wars game universe. And yet, it's fresh and new, and it sounds like you, which is really cool.
That is really cool. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. One of the things that must have been a kind of an interesting challenge with this game is, you know, usually when you play, especially a first-person game or a game that has a really strong storyline, you know that eventually you're going to defeat the bad guys, whoever it is.
Right, exactly.
But with this one, especially with the multiplayer, the skirmishes and the encounters can go either way. So how did you design the music so that, like, the game engine could choose which stems to pull from depending on how, you know, which side is winning?
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's a great question, because this is sort of game music 101, I guess, if you will, is this idea of building modular music puzzle pieces that the game's engine can sort of adapt the music to fit the scenario. Because it's obviously every player is going to play differently, and, you know, one scene, if you'll call it that, might take, you know, 1 minute for one player and 10 minutes for another. So I have to keep those kinds of things in mind, you know, as I'm writing, of trying to come up with something for every possible scenario that you could encounter. You know, and in this case, like you mentioned, I mean, because either side could win in any given skirmish, you know, I accommodated for that by making sure that I had sort of an Imperial winning fanfare, an Imperial losing fanfare, a Rebel winning fanfare, a Rebel losing fanfare, and they all are capable of working with the main material, so that it can seamlessly transition right into one of these fanfares to kind of indicate whether you've won or lost, or are winning or losing, or whether you need to, like, sort of step up your game a bit and play a little harder, or, you know, there's all these musical indicators, but they all have to kind of fit together like a puzzle. It's like, you know, I like to use this analogy a lot. It's like the Choose Your Own Adventure books. You know, I had those when I was a kid, where, you know, you read to the end of chapter one, and if you want to, you know, walk down this road, you turn to page 25. But if you want to do this, you go to, you know, page 40. You know, so it's kind of like a musical version of that. You know, I'm writing this story, and then I'm writing multiple endings or multiple, you know, scenarios, and they all have to be able to seamlessly transition and still feel like it's part of a unified story.
So do you do that by keeping everything in the same key?
That's a very good question. So in many games, you'll hear that composers will stick to a similar key, or they'll stick to a similar meter or tempo. But with Star Wars, for it to feel like it fits, you know, the musical aesthetic of Star Wars, it can't really stay in one key for very long, or one meter, or one tempo. I mean, that music jumps around constantly, and that's what kind of makes it exciting, and that's what makes it feel like Star Wars. So that adds an extra layer of you know, complexity to how all these puzzle pieces work together. So I'm always sort of tracking, what key do I end in? So I need to make sure that I start this next little transition in that key, or what tempo, you know, was I in at this point, and how do I get from this tempo and make it feel musical? So I'll write like a little transition that, you know, either speeds up or slows down to get you into the new tempo, or modulates to get you into the new key. And all of these transitions are sort of built into the audio engine as well. So at any point, it can call up one of these things and transition you into a new piece of music, or back into the same piece of music, like a loop. But it always will do it on logical places. So it can read forward and say, you know, we need to make this transition on the next downbeat. Where's that downbeat? And there's a marker. Or, you know, we need to make the transition on this downbeat because that's in the same key of where we're going. These kinds of things, all these considerations are made. And, you know, it really is sort of like building this, you know, complex quilt that needs to all fit together. And when you stand back from it, look like something.
Yeah. Okay. Or kind of like three-dimensional chess, I guess. Kind of.
Yeah.
Too,
yeah. It is, in a way. Yeah.
One of the things that I really appreciate about the soundtrack are the two tracks that are like right next to each other, with the successful bombing run and then the unsuccessful run. And, yeah. And it's so cool that you did that. That's really neat.
Yeah. And, you know, and we, I chose to do that because I it's a good example of a bit of what we were talking about before, because you know that there is an example of two completely different pieces of music for the same scenario. You know, this, and you can hear what it would sound like if you were successful or not successful. And those two pieces of music coexist in the same space, and it will transition to one or the other based on how well you're playing in that moment. And that's sort of a good example of how, you know, the game engine works with the music pretty much throughout the entire game.
Yeah, I've never come across a soundtrack that does that before, but that may be because there aren't really too many games that that do this with the music, you know, kind of right on the fly and stuff. So
Yeah, you'll see layering systems in a lot of other games where, you know, if you want to amp up the intensity, you add in one more layer of music and they're muted until they're called up to play, you know, so it hits a marker in the game or some type of, you know, indicator that says, okay, the intensity is rising now. So then it the audio engine will unmute and crossfade in another layer and then another above that and so on and so on. And you build it in layers this way. But with Star Wars music, you can't really work that way because you couldn't have just strings only play and then add brass when it gets more intense and then add percussion when it gets even more intense, because by its very nature, it's symphonic music, and symphonic music requires the entire symphony orchestra in order to be what it is. So there was never a point where you could just carve out one particular section of the orchestra and say, okay, this is layer one, and then layer two adds this instrument in. So instead of that, I would write two pieces of music instead of one piece of music with multiple layers. And then, you know, that way you have like a bass layer and then a slightly more intense version. It's a very similar piece of music, works for the same scenario, and even has the same meters and tempos so that they can coexist on top of each other and it can transition from one to the other based on how the player is playing. So it's pretty complicated, and it requires a lot more music than maybe a typical layering system, but it helps it still feel like it's a symphonic, you know, very narrative score.
Yeah, because as I was listening to both of them and then listening in the game too, it really is seamless. I mean, you just... Yeah, so well done.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear.
Well, speaking of, you know, orchestras and orchestral music, from what I understand, it was quite a process to get this soundtrack recorded.
It was a process. And actually for this one, for Squadrons, we actually recorded everything in Nashville with the Nashville Studio Orchestra, and they're absolutely phenomenal. And we recorded at Ocean Way Studios, and we recorded with a full orchestra for about 70% of the score. It was, you know, a 100-piece orchestra. And then along comes COVID, and threw a wrench in the works. We still had about 30% of the score left to record. We were set to record it last March, but then suddenly we were not able to put, you know, multiple people in a room at once, which is pretty much the only way you can record an orchestra. So instead of throwing in the towel and admitting defeat, we came up with a way to do it by what would have taken maybe 2 days to record with a full orchestra. We set out about 40 days to record one instrument at a time, one instrument per day in a small studio. So there was never more than one person in the room, and then an engineer in a separate room with a separate entrance. And between each, you know, instrument that would come in from day to day, they cleaned the studio and, you know, Lysol, everything. And then, you know, we recorded every single part one at a time. And then our mixer, Steve Kaplan, had to sort of assemble this puzzle, very complex puzzle, and match it sonically to the rest of the score, the other 70% of the score that was recorded with a full orchestra. So that was an interesting challenge, you know, both from a logistics standpoint, but certainly from a mixing and you know, matching the sonic sound standpoint. I mean, that is a very crazy challenge, but to be quite honest, you know, it was really well done. It worked really well, and I find it, even myself, hard to remember which ones were recorded with the full orchestra and which weren't. You know, it all sounds pretty seamless.
Yeah, it really does. I listened to the soundtrack before I even knew that, and it didn't occur to me that that was how some of it had to be assembled piece by piece. So yeah, the whole effect is that it sounds like you got it, you know, in just a few days with everybody there.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. No, it's great. I mean, I wouldn't recommend it as a normal way of recording an orchestra. I mean, I look forward very greatly to the day where we can put 100 people back in a room and do this, you know, the way it's traditionally done. But it certainly was a workaround that very surprisingly to me, you know, fit right in with the rest of the score that was recorded with the whole orchestra at once.
That's phenomenal. Well, it must have been so much fun. Well, fun and also a big challenge to put the soundtrack together. So how did that all come about, and how involved were you with assembling the soundtrack?
So I assembled the soundtrack on my end. You know, actually, I worked with my one of my assistants, E.T. Chen, and we worked together and, you know, chose the best moments, the moments we felt like represented, you know, the game best, and tried to put together a soundtrack that would, from top to finish, tell a story. You know, it feel like a narrative story. So even if you're just listening, it could feel musical and feel like it flows from one track to the next and has interest and, you know, isn't. Because, like I mentioned before, this score is quite a bit of bombastic action, over-the-top, fast-paced, you know, high-energy music. But if you were to listen to an hour and a half of just nothing but that, it would be pretty, you know, mind-numbing. So we had to come up with a way of using the music that was more part of the single player, that was a bit more narrative and, you know, some background music, and kind of weave in and out of action so it felt like, you know, there's an ebb and flow to it. So I think we were pretty successful at doing that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it really does follow the story arc. And you're right, there's a lot of variation in all the tracks as well. And the whole experience of listening to it, like I said, in the car on the expressway is fantastic. And Gordy, it has been so much fun to peek under the hood and talk about how you put this amazing soundtrack together. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it.